Shri Granth Raj, Srimad Bhagavatam Mahapurana ki, Shri Sat Goswami Prabhu ki, Shri Maya Puram ki, Shri Shri Gaur Nitai ki, Samaveta Bhakti Vinda ki, Gaur Premanandi Hari Hari Bo, all glories to this and all the devotees, all glories to this and all the devotees, all glories to this and all the devotees. All glories to Shri Shri Guru and Gauranga, glories to Srila Prabhupada, Nama Om, Vishnu Paraya, Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale, Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nityananda, Namaste Saraswati Devi, Gauravani Vacharya, Nirvishesha Shunyavari, Pashyasya Desa Karana. Have you seen Nitai Gauranga lately in these classes? Has he come?
He's coming.
I was walking home.
He's
so busy with all of these.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I haven't. I just wanted to say something about the psychology, because I haven't verified this with him, but I don't think he'll have any objection. But I remember that last year there's prasad service. Rather later in the afternoon, here during festival time, 3 or 3:30. So I thought the best would be to have this psychology course beginning at 4 in the afternoon here, same place, and going till 5:30. That means 5:30 is just when it starts to get. The sun is going down, so that's a good time to stop. So we'll run this class in that way for an hour and a half, 4:30 to 5:30 p.m., Monday through Friday, but starting on Tuesday the 14th. I think that's the date, Tuesday the 14th, because Maharaj and everyone will not be back until Monday the 13th from Ujjain. And since we want to do things like show a very interesting film, we'll need to have personalities like Moshai Preeti Vardhan, who's expert in setting these things up. So the class will start then on Tuesday. That is, yes, the following week, after this weekend, 4 to 5:30, 5 days a week, and we'll just see how long it goes. If we need to go longer than 2 weeks, which will bring us up to the time of the parikram, then we will break, and we can continue during the seminar time. There's 5 days of seminars reserved after the parikram. We can just continue to finish the class. I do know that Nitai Gauranga Prabhu is very much now engaged in thinking up ideas of his side of the presentation. All my work is done. I just have to present what I've written several years ago. So, but he's going to add a lot from his side. So there, already with my work alone, there's quite a lot of very deep philosophy to cover, which of course will bring forth questions. And we'll be freer in our taking of questions in this class, since the subject matter is very focused on the psychological aspect of Srimad Bhagavatam. So I think we can be more forthcoming with your questions. So it may be that we'll need 3 weeks to cover all the material. We'll see. 5 days a week, an hour and a half a day is also quite a lot of time. So we'll just, I can't really tell you how long the class will last in terms of days. We have maximum 3 weeks, and we may very well fill up all that time. So keep that in mind, those who are interested in this. And now we will proceed from where we left off in the study guide of chapter 12 of Srimad Bhagavatam, Birth of Emperor Parikshit. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So for those of you who are able to follow along on your own copy of the study guide, we're on page 3. And we are, yes, near the bottom of the first paragraph, where the Brahmins are still describing the glories of the newly born Parikshit Maharaj to Maharaj Yudhisthira. Maharaj Yudhisthira asked the Brahmanas whether this child will be a glory to his dynasty, the Kaurava dynasty, of which the Pandu dynasty is part, was a very great and ancient and glorious dynasty of kings with many outstanding personalities in history to exemplify the best qualities of this dynasty. So he was wondering, Yudhisthira was interested to know whether this child would similarly keep up the family name, as you might. You might put it in a bit more mundane terms. But that is a natural question coming from the king who is the present king who is representing the dynasty to the world, whether this descendant who will soon occupy the throne, whether he will be able to fulfill the responsibility. So the Brahmanas are answering in a very, very positive way, extremely positive way. And so certainly Yudhisthira is being assured as he hears these glorifications of the newborn Parikshit. So the Brahmanas continue, and like Prahlad Maharaj, he will be a great devotee of Lord Krishna. Now this is very nice. You know, there are 26 qualities of Vaishnavas. And we are advised to try and develop all of them in the course of our devotional service. We should. It is very, necessary, but maybe not everyone is seeing the necessity. So let me give you advice. It is very good to learn these qualities or to have them posted wherever you're staying so that you can see the list. Years and years ago, His Holiness Satsarupa Maharaj wrote a very nice book on the 26 qualities of devotees. I don't know if it's still in print, but it was a very excellent book on this subject. So, we are all meant to develop these qualities. To have them in full is to be considered a pure devotee. But yet, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that of these 26 qualities, actually only one is the mukhya quality. See, there are two terms, mukhya and gauna. So this refers to meanings of words in the Sanskrit language. So, just like, let's take for an example, an English word, common English word, like apple. So the mukhya definition of the word apple would be that reddish, or sometimes they're green, or sometimes they're yellow. But anyway, that typical fruit that comes from the species of tree known as the apple tree. That's an apple. That's the mukhya, straightforward definition. But there are also gauna definitions, which may come up in indirect ways in poetry. Like, for example, there's a romantic expression. It's not much in vogue anymore. In fact, I think, at least in America, if you would use this phrase, you'd be considered pretty corny. But in the good old days, there used to be this phrase, you are the apple of my eye. This would be something generally a young man would say to a young woman that he wants to have a relationship with. You have become the apple of my eye. Now, this is rather odd. You may think of a person with an apple stuck in his eye. So it's a kind of poetic alliteration that an apple, actually the Srila Prabhupada said that among Western fruits that are found in the Western world, the apple is the equivalent to the mango. In India, the mango is the king of fruits, easily the best, sweetest, tastiest, most delicious of all fruits. So when Prabhupada was visiting the West, he was able to, I don't know if in India, if because they do have apples here, but I think they've been brought in from outside. But anyway, he had much opportunity in his travels in the West to be served apples. In fact, that was the second personal service I did for Srila Prabhupada, was bringing him some apples and also some blueberries. And there was a little bit of butter, and he took the blueberries. Oh no, he took one piece of apple, I think, and popped it into his mouth and then said more. But the devotees urged him on, and they said, the blueberries, which are a specialty, this was in Boston Temple, where I joined ISKCON. So Boston Temple is in a part region of the United States called New England, because it was settled by persons coming from England, the famous ship Mayflower, and like that, the original white settlers of America. Mainly they came to that part, the northeastern corner of the USA. And there you have the oldest families in the United States still living there in places like Boston and Amherst and Holyoke, where I was born. Holyoke is near Amherst. Amherst is the home of Emily Dickinson, one of the famous American poetists. So there's all these, it's a place of the old families, the old money. They call them the Boston Blue Bloods because they're the closest thing to English royalty that you can find in the United States. They're even referred to as the Boston Brahmins because the best schools are there, Harvard. And then down in Connecticut, which is just south of Massachusetts, there's Yale University. So these are the two best universities in the USA. So we have these terms, Boston Brahmins. I used to hear this since I was a kid, not really knowing what a Brahmin was. But so I joined in Boston Temple. I was originally born there, and then we moved away, and I came back to that area to become a devotee, because at that time, Back to Godhead magazine was being published there, and I was so impressed by that magazine, I wanted to meet the devotees who were producing it. I thought, these must be very intelligent people, very interesting to discuss philosophy with. So anyway, Prabhupada, I remember him taking a bit of this very tangy green apple and popping it in his mouth. And he would, when Prabhupada would take something like that, he would always, there's this word, ruminate. It means he would, like a cow, chew very slowly and thoughtfully to taste, you know, taste it all. And then he told me to distribute the rest of the plate to the devotees in the room. But they urged him, no, Srila Prabhupada, try the blueberries, because that's a specialty in New England. Blueberries grow very nicely there. And so I remember he put out his hand and I put in his divine grace's lotus palm some blueberries, and then he said also butter. So I put some butter, this butter that had been mixed with sugar, and a bit of that on top of the blueberry. And this he took with great relish. He moved his head this way and that way, indicating his approval. So, why did I start talking about this? I always go off on these things.
Apple of my eye.
Thank you very much. Yeah, so that's an example of gauna, a gauna definition in Sanskrit terminology. Gauna comes from guna, quality. So when language becomes very qualitative instead of exacting quantitative, then that's where you get all this poetic alliteration and metaphor. So, mukya, the why did you begin to talk about this?
Devotee qualities.
Oh yes, someone with some smriti is here. Very good. I've been working very hard in the last week, so my brain's batteries are very low at this time. I'm sorry, because I'm preparing for other things. Anyway, yes, qualities. So 26 qualities of devotees should be developed. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur says of the 26, 25 are gauna qualities. And only one is mukya, which means that if we can focus on this one, then the other 25 will come automatically. They are actually more or less echoes of the main one, like poetic echoes or expansions, or it's like the moon has its wonderful moon beams. The sunlight has its sun beams. So these are beams that emanate from the gauna quality, gauna lakshana. And what is that? Krishna eka sharana. One should be surrendered to Lord Krishna in all circumstances, at all times, all places, all circumstances. And so similarly, so many glorifications have been made by the Brahmanas, comparing him to Ikshvaku and to Lord Rama and Shibi and Arjuna. But finally, they conclude by saying that he will be like Prahlad Maharaj, a great devotee of Lord Krishna. And that's significant, also mentioning Sri Prahlad Maharaj, because a Parikshit is certainly a king appearing on the Sura side. You see, the side of the Suras, the Devatas, Naradeva, king in Varna Ashram, is known as Naradeva. Among the Naras, the human beings, he is Deva. He is like a god, a demigod. So, Vishnu Bhakti Smrito Deva. Deva means devotee of Krishna. But that doesn't mean that an asura cannot also become a devotee if he renounces the mentality of the asura. He may be born in asura vamsa, like Sri Prahlad Maharaj. So, in this material world, unfortunately, because the bodily conception, bodily identification is so powerful, these things affect us. The family, or race, or religion, or nation, these are upadis that we are born into. Then, if we're not fortunate enough to be blessed by the association of a sadhu, then we will carry these with us. And they will automatically put us in opposition with people with other upadis. Just like in countries where there's a race problem, like the country I come from, the United States, very famously. There is a race problem between the black population and the white population. It's gone down a bit, but I remember when I was growing up in Detroit in 1967, there was a Detroit riot. The black population of the ghetto rose up and began fighting in the streets, burning cars, shooting at policemen and firemen. And the National Guard had to be called out. It went on for a whole week, and it was, I think, the worst race riot in the United States history. I was about 17 years old at the time, 16. So I remember it quite clearly. And it's all because of upadi, skin color. Actually, just the modes of nature. We become furious, anger. You see, the time, with the time, are just like the moon, the mind represents the moon. So the moon goes through its phases. Sometimes it's Purnima, and the moon is beautifully shining, filling the night full of calming light. Everything is very, looks very beautiful in the moonlight. We feel also very, well, some people anyway, feel pacified. Some people actually go mad during those full moon periods, but normal people feel calmed. It's very beautiful to go out in the evening during full moon. Everything is lit up with this wondrous silvery light. It looks like a magical, especially here in Mayapur, it looks like a magical garden, especially Gaur Purnima, which is upcoming. It's so beautiful. That moon is, if you stay in Mayapur and you see, you'll see so many Purnimas, but there's no Purnima like Gaur Purnima. There's just something so wonderful about the moon. It's so golden, and effulgent, and such a wonderful effect. So sometimes the moon is in its Purnima phase, and sometimes Amavasya. It is a black moon. The sky may be very clear, illuminated. You can even see the black disk of the moon. Sometimes you can actually see it in the night sky. So that it is also known as the new moon, black moon, Amavasya. So the moon, Chandradev, he is the lord of the mind. And so just as the moon goes through its phases, so our minds go through its phases. So sometimes we are feeling sukh, happiness, in the mind. You know, it may be, it's very remarkable, it may be a very cold, drizzly day, miserable, as we often, those of you from Europe, you often are confronted with days like that. I remember when I first came to Europe, I was from the United States, where weather in the USA tends to be more regulated, at least according to my memory. In winter, there would be snow, and the sky would be cloudy. In summer, the sky would be clear and blue, and it would be warm. But when I came to Europe, summertime, very often for weeks, there would be slate gray skies, you see, just gray clouds above. It would be chilly. And I would wonder, what kind of place is this? And the people too, because of that, they will be downcast. See, gray faces, hurrying to work, very morose. But actually, our mood does not necessarily depend upon that. Sometimes, just to give a material example, it may be a very gray, miserable day, foggy, everything so bad looking that normally you might become depressed. But then the young man, he gets a phone call from a girl he likes. He's been trying to catch her attention for weeks. And finally she rings him up and says, "You know, I like you. We should spend time together." And then he says, "Yes, yes, let's have a date this Friday. Let's go to the movies. Yes, yes." Then he puts down, and he's in heaven. So he walks out in this miserable day with a big smile on his face, and he's whistling. Feels so good. Because of the mind, the nature of the mind, you see. So the mind moves through its phases. So even regardless of the exterior circumstances, we may feel happy, or we may feel unhappy, or we may feel angry. You see, the anger floods our minds, and that's one of the gates to hell, along with lust and greed. So sometimes the mind is chanchala. You know this word, it means changeable, changing, flickering. So it's very much subject to these. This will explain at great length in our psychology class why this is going on. Why is it the mind changes like that and suddenly becomes filled up, overflooded with a desire that seems to pop up out of nowhere? So this happens to us individually, and it can happen to us collectively. The time, it's brought with the time. Time is the background factor to everything that's happening in this world, including even desire. You see? Even desire is simply the effect of time. We have so many desire seeds stored up in our hearts, and as the spokes of the 12 spokes, or sometimes said 360 spokes, or sometimes said thousands and thousands of spokes of the Kala Chakra, which is a form of the Lord's Sudarshan weapon, as they turn. Then these Kama Bijas, these seeds of desire, are coming to fruition in our heart. And that can happen individually, but also collectively. Just like in Yugoslavia, there actually still is a country called Yugoslavia, which is now simply Serbia and Montenegro. It's become a very small country. But it used to be a very big Yugoslavia. The actual word, if you know something about Sanskrit, you can understand it immediately. Jugala Kishore means conjunction or joining together of, like when we see Radha and Krishna together, beautiful, the two most beautiful, transcendental, loving, youthful couple. That is, they are known as Jugal Kishore. So, Jugo and then Slavia means there's different groups of Slavic people: Slovenians, not Slovakians. Some Slovakians live there, though. Croatians, Serbians, Montenegrins. So they were actually forced together by Tovaric, another big Tovaric. I don't know what this. There must be. Anyone know the Serbian equivalent? There must. This is Russian, of course. There must be a Serbian equivalent. But he was a communist leader named Tito, and he artificially brought together this country of Yugoslavia of people like the Slovenians, for example. They're just Slavic-speaking Austrians. And the Czechs are very much like that too. Czech people are, the Polish say of the Czechs, they're just Germans who speak a Slavic language. You see, they're not even real Slavs. When you look at them, they don't look Slavic. They look more like Germans, and they act like Germans. They're very efficient. They're very, industrial. And so there's a big difference when you drive across the border from the Czech Republic into Poland, because as soon as you get into Poland, especially if it's a Friday or Saturday night, that's when you start seeing the men on the side of the road walking like this. Because they've had a bit of an overdose of that wonderful clear liquid that comes, that is so freely available in that country and other Slavic countries. The root being based on the Slavic word for water, but instead of voda, it's vodka. And so they like to indulge on that Friday. You must have seen Shanti, isn't it? Every Polish village. You never see that in the Czech Republic. You never see people staggering around drunk out of their minds. Unless it's some special day, festival day. But normally they're hardworking people. So anyway, Yugoslavia was formed out of these people of different mentalities. And then Comrade Tito died. Death comes to everyone. The wheel of time turned and he died. He was the man sitting on top of this artificial creation, Yugoslavia. And after he died, then the tremors began, the trouble, the friction between the different groups began to be inflamed more and more as time went on. And then finally, big war broke. Oh yeah, I forgot to mention, there was another part. What is that? Bosnia. That's one of the flashpoints in Bosnia, because there are Christians, Orthodox Christians, Catholics, and in Yugoslavia, those two don't get along. That's the Serbians and the Croatians. But then there's also Muslims. And the Muslims in history had once conquered the whole of what was Yugoslavia, as well as Bulgaria and Greece. And so there are a lot of bad memories going back towards the Muslims, because they had tried to convert everyone to Islam, and they were overthrown, and then they became the bottom. They went from the top to the bottom. Just like here in India, too. The Muslims were once on top, now they're on the bottom of society. And so there are memories going way back. And so as the time came, anger flooded the minds of all the people, not just individually, but collectively. And so the Slovenians wanted their independence, and the Serbians marched in with their tanks, and there was fighting in the streets. And then the Bosnians wanted their independence, but then among themselves, they started to fight, Muslims versus Catholics versus Orthodox, three sides fighting. And very terrible. They did very inhumane things to one another. It was just blood bath for some time. And people were wondering, because before, of course, these undercurrent of tensions were there, just like they're always there in any society. You know, there are always jokes. Always jokes between. Even people who seem very mild-mannered, like I know, having lived in Scandinavia. Now everyone thinks Scandinavians are really, you know, peaceful, quiet people. But they have their jokes. The Norwegians tell jokes about the Swedes. The Swedes tell these jokes about Norwegians. I'll tell you one joke. They're the same jokes. It just depends on which side of the border you hear them. You see, it'll either be a Norwegian joke or a Swedish joke. They're all the same jokes, because the languages are so similar, so they cross the border back and forth. So two Norwegians will get together and say, "Did you hear about the big helicopter crash in Sweden?" "No, what happened?" "Well, the pilot, he took the helicopter up, 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 higher and higher. Then it got cold, so he turned off the fan." There are so many jokes like that to show how the other ones are stupid. You know, but these are mild-mannered. In other places, they get there's more of a edge to them. And then in other places, you see, use a certain word, a certain phrase, and you could get punched in the face. There was a comedy troupe in England called Monty Python. They did a routine about Hungarians coming to, after there was an attempted revolution against the communist government in 1956. After that time, many Hungarians fled Hungary and came to Great Britain. And they opened shops, and they only spoke Hungarian. But they were selling interesting goods. So British people would try to go in these shops and buy things, but there was a language problem. So they showed one scene. A proper English person all dressed up like English people of the 1950s, black suit and bowler hat, comes in with a Hungarian phrase dictionary. And he comes up to the person, Hungarian guy, behind the desk, the counter. And he says something with heavy British accent. He tries to pronounce a Hungarian phrase for, do you have any long yellow peppers? You see, in Hungary there's these long yellow peppers that grow. So he asks, he thinks he's asking for this. And he's, mispronouncing every word. And the shopkeeper suddenly punches him in the face because he said something very nasty, not knowing it. So there's certain words and phrases that can suddenly bring out this anger from a person's mind. So according to time, this may happen across the whole population of an area. Suddenly everyone's mind becomes inflamed against someone else, another group of people. And then violence breaks out, horrible violence, like in Yugoslavia or Rwanda a few years ago. There were two tribes of Africans, the Tutsi and the Hutu or something, anyway. And they just started chopping one another up with machetes. And it was a bloodbath, rivers filled with bodies, chopped up bodies. Rivers carrying the bodies to the sea. Very horrible. Millions of people. In Cambodia in the 1970s, the Khmer Rouge. Insane. I mean, communism is insane, but among communists, the Khmer Rouge were probably the most extremely insane group of communists that there ever existed. And they took over. And in the space of 2 years, they murdered something like a million, something like a good percentage of their population. They murdered them in very horrible ways. So sometimes this happens. Prabhupada says, this is the goddess Kali. This is the goddess Kali, and she is the feminine form of time, devastating time. She's widely worshipped here in Bengal. So goddess Kali arranges to bring masses of people together and destroy them. This is her dance. She's garlanded with skulls, and she dances around to the wild type of music that you hear in these parts of India, Bengal especially, big drums being beaten very loudly. And she dances around, stamping out the lives of many, many people. So, yes, this is the mind. The mind goes through its phases. It is chanchala. So, again, do you remember what the point?
I think that you started talking about discriminating. That most people discriminate on the basis.
Yes, the bodily platform. Yes, now I remember. Thank you very much. Very helpful. I just wanted to say that then this comparison of Prikshit Maharaj to Prahlad Maharaj is very significant, because Prahlad Maharaj is by bodily conception, this upadi bhuta conception, a demon, an asura, and therefore would be on opposite sides to someone in the dynasty of Prikshit Maharaj. Dynasties of kings, the great dynasties of kings in Vedic time, there were two, Suryavamsa and Chandravamsa, and these are heavenly, coming from heaven. Surya means from the sun, Chandra means from the moon. So Lord Krishna is appearing in the Vasudev's, his father, is in the Chandra dynasty. And Lord Ramachandra, he's called Ramachandra, but he's actually in the Surya dynasty. So, Ram, Krishna. Therefore, actually, even in the Parasara Hora Shastra, it is said that the sun represents Lord Ramachandra and the moon represents Lord Krishna. So, these two dynasties are there. They come from heaven. And Prahlad and Bali and others are coming from the underworld, Bilasvarga, where the Asuras live. So on the basis of bodily upadi, there ought to be friction. But these Brahmanas are glorifying Prikshit Maharaj in terms of Sri Prahlad Maharaj, the greatest devotee among the Asuras. So this is on the spiritual level, and this is very important for us as members of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Actually, we're all realizing this. We may not appreciate this fully every day, but just see, I won't do this, but if we were to ask from where everyone is coming, you see, we would get so many different answers, you're coming from different countries. So where else do we hear people from so many different countries whose own native language is so different from the other languages coming together for one purpose? You see, nowhere else, because Krishna consciousness functions on the platform of the real self, the spirit soul. So that's a very nice conclusion to these glorifications of Maharaj Prikshit. Thereafter, the Brahmanas departed, and this was the summary, Shlokanusharanam, of verses 12 to 29. So, speaking of the moon, the verses continue to say that just as the waxing moon develops day after day, the child grew up luxuriantly under the care of his grandfathers. Because he examined all human beings in his search for that personality whom he had seen within his mother's womb, he constantly contemplated the Lord and became famous as Parikshit, the examiner. That's what the name Parikshit means. He was always looking for Krishna, even as a very small child. You see how children, they look around, you know? When they're in a peaceful mood, very often children are just looking with big eyes at the world, because in this lifetime, this is their first of course, it's a re-experience, but Krishna has covered their memory of past lives because of their desires. So they're seeing the world anew, and it's just fascinating for them. But Parikshit was not just staring at the world in kind of ignorant wonderment. He was actually looking to see, where is Krishna? Where is that person I remember who brought me back to life within the womb of my mother? He was in constant... From his very childhood, Parikshit was a Mahabhagavata. He was constantly wrapped in contemplation upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the summary of verses 30 and 31. And there's a Nivesha, or inserted comment to this section. In his purport to verse 30, Srila Prabhupada writes, "One may not be as fortunate as Maharaj Prikshit to have the opportunity to see the Lord in the womb of his mother, But even if he is not so fortunate, he can be made so if the parents of the child desire him to be so. There is a practical example in my personal life in this connection. My father was a pure devotee of the Lord. And when I was only 4 or 5 years old, my father gave me a couple of forms of Radha and Krishna. In playful manner, I used to worship these deities along with my sister, and I used to imitate the performances of a neighboring temple of Radha Govinda. By constantly visiting this neighboring temple and copying the ceremonies in connection with my own deities of play, I developed a natural affinity for the Lord. My father used to observe all the ceremonies befitting my position. Later on, these activities were suspended due to my association in the schools and colleges, and I became completely out of practice. But in my youthful days, when I met my spiritual master, Sri Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj, again I revived my old habit, and the same playful deities became my worshipful deities in proper regulation. That means his childhood deities became his grihastha altar deities. And actually these deities are still visible. You can still go have darshan of them in Calcutta today. This was followed up until after I left the family connection, and I am pleased that my generous father gave the first impression, which was developed later into regulative devotional service by his divine grace. Maharaj Prahlad also advised that such impressions of a godly relation must be impregnated from the very beginning of childhood, otherwise one may miss the opportunity of the human form of life, which is valuable, although it is temporary, like other forms of life. And the Nivesha ends with this comment that Srimad Bhagavatam 2.3.15.16 notes that even while playing with dolls, little Prince Parikshit used to render seva to Lord Krishna by imitating the worship of the family deity. So that gives us an insight into the position of Srila Prabhupada also. Because if the symptom of Mahabhagavata is such attraction to Krishna that even the play of a child, does a child have propensities to play? And as we see here in the Gurukul, although we love the little boys who attend school here, observing them at play, we notice there is a tendency for the activities of play to take them away from remembrance of Krishna and involve them in nonsense. But when you see a child whose even play period is centered on Krishna, that means very special child. And so, Parikshit Maharaj was Mahabhagavata, and Prabhupada is letting us know his position also was the same. So we will stop here. Today is Tuesday. That means tomorrow is a break. And Thursday will be the last day. Hopefully we can... We're moving right along. Well, I don't think there's any way we'll be able to finish the whole chapter, but we can at least look at the... We want to come to the questions. Yes, we will definitely come to the questions. There are 3 questions asked in this chapter, so we'll be able to study them. And then... this semester we'll have a break until sometime in March. And since our school staff is absent, there won't be any party. So we won't be able to present you all with slices of pizza or as a going away present, which would be a nice thing to do. So anyway, thank you very much. We'll see, it's exactly 9:00 right now, so we will see you all, I hope, again on Thursday at 8:00. And please remember, just a last reminder, the psychology course, unless there's a change that I cannot foresee, will be starting on the 14th of this month, at 4 p.m., Monday through Friday, and will go 1.5 hours. So those of you who are looking for very deep yet interesting penetration into the most difficult parts of the Srimad Bhagavatam, are heartily invited to participate in this seminar. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.